December 23rd, 2007, in Auckland, Bhagavatam 5.13.8.
Namah Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasadaya Vajrayashi Mati Bhakti Vedanta Swami Mati Namani Namani Sadeva Sarasati Devam Gauravani Pachami Vizayasi Samayana Vasatari Satayana Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Vita Parikamala Shri Guru Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Ragavatam Vitam Samsajiva Sadhvitam Sadhvadutam Bharijana Sahita Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lavitam Shri Vishakam Vitam Shri Have you ever tried to do something that was really difficult and you were working for a long time and it was just a lot of austerity and pain? Anybody ever tried to do something like that? No? It took a long time, it was really, really hard and a lot of suffering? Alright, so I think Bhagavatam Jed Bard is going to speak to us here in this verse about these difficulties and what is the real problem, and Prabhupada in the purport is going to give us the real solution. Translation in purport by Shri Prabhupada. Sometimes the merchant in the forest wants to climb the hills and mountains, but due to insufficient footwear, his feet are pricked by small stone fragments and by thorns on the mountain. Right? So you got that? Bhagavatam is full, especially this section, is full of imagery and metaphor. So you're climbing this mountain and you just don't have the right shoes. Actually, I was speaking to one devotee who was climbing in a hovalam, and they thought, let's go barefoot. It would be more auspicious, but it was really hot. And their feet were just getting blistered and cut up, you know. And finally, at a certain point, they started praying. There's nobody else there. They started saying, Krishna, we need some shoes. And then, lo and behold, 5 minutes later, on the side of the path were some abandoned shoes. So this climbing this mountain and being pricked by thorns and pebbles, that's just like what? This is a metaphor. That's like what? Trying to do something that's very difficult. You ever try to do something? It's very difficult.
I was just hearing about a devotee who really wanted to make a lot of money. Really, really wanted to make a lot of money. So this one friend of his said, there's a shop that wants t-shirts. He's from Nepal. Next time you go to Nepal, you can buy t-shirts and you can sell them to the shop and you'll make a lot of money. So he was all enthused. He went to the shopkeeper. He got an order. He even got some of it prepaid. He was so excited. There's a Gurukuli, by the way, from the Vrindavan Gurukul. Then when he went to Nepal to see his family, he bought thousands of t-shirts. He had them shipped to America. And they arrived in the port, and then he made a mistake, and he had them flown by air. Spent more money than he had calculated all his money. You know. Finally brought them to the shopkeeper. And they were large, and the shopkeeper wanted medium. And he said, I'm not going to take any of this. Refund my deposit. And instead of becoming rich, he became in debt. So this is this. Sometimes the merchant in the forest wants to climb the hills and mountains, but due to insufficient footwear, his feet are pricked by small stone fragments and by thorns. Being pricked by them, he becomes very aggrieved. Sometimes a person who is very attached to his family becomes overwhelmed with hunger, and due to his miserable condition, he becomes furious with his family members. So look at the Sanskrit. Antara. Antara means inside. Vahina by the strong fire of appetite. So Prabhupada's saying this specifically. This is hunger burning in the abdomen. We think of Bhima, who could only fast one ekadasi a year. He was Rikodara, like he had a wolf in his stomach. So, but this is also an analogy for any kind of inner distress. There's some kind of inner distress. Some kind of insufficiency. We're not feeling fulfilled. And then what do? We become krujiti. We become filled with krodha. And who do we get angry at? Janaya. Other people, who in this case specifically would be the family members. The very people that we're supposed to have the most love and affection for, and we're supposed to have the most love and affection for us, when we have some inner great burning distress, we often become angry. We don't have a family, then we get angry at the other brahmacharis, the GBC, somebody. So what are the two analogies here?
Climbing a hill.
Climbing a hill, a mountain, and the summit. So climbing the hill, what happens when you're climbing the mountain? Your feet get pricked, and what happens when you're hungry? You get angry at others. What is the word we have in each of these verses in this section? Kvachit, which means?
Sometimes.
So of course the living entity is thinking, well, it doesn't happen all the time. Sometimes I buy t-shirts in Nepal and I do sell them and make a lot of money. But if you add it all up, it's something's happening all the time. Sometimes the crickets, Maharaj was talking to us yesterday about the crickets and the mosquitoes. So sometimes there's crickets and mosquitoes, sometimes there's a dry river, sometimes there's a tree without fruits, sometimes there's a mountain with thorn, sometimes we're hungry. And you add up all the sometimes, and you end up with something's happening all the time. At least that isn't happening today. I don't have any crickets today. Maybe I'll be able to. Purport. The ambitious, conditioned soul, ambitious, climbing up this mountain, wants to be very happy in this material world with his family, but he's compared to a traveler in the forest who desires to climb a hill full of thorns and small stones. As stated in the previous verse, the happiness derived from society, friendship, and love is like a drop of water in the scorching heat of the desert. Who here has ever been in a desert? You can get really thirsty in the desert. Right? One drop of water. Somebody comes with an eyedropper, you know, puts a drop of water in your tongue. One may want to become very great and powerful in society, but this is like attempting to climb a hill full of thorns. Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur compares one's family to high mountains. Being happy in their association is like a hungry man's endeavoring to climb a mountain full of thorns. So now Prabhupada's putting it together based on Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur's commentary. So you're hungry and your feet are being pierced by thorns while you're trying to climb this mountain. Almost 99.9% of the population is unhappy in family life. Well, at least it's 0.1%. Maybe I'll be that 0.1%. I have met a few people who are happy in family life. Few devotees. Despite all the attempts made to satisfy the family members. So do we have experience of this? You try to make your mother and father happy, were they always happy? Did that work? Those of you who are parents, were you always able to make your children happy? Did you try? You weren't trying to make them unhappy. Were you always able, those of you who are brothers and sisters, did you try to make them happy? Were you always able to make them happy? Did it work? You have a wife, a husband? Are you always able to make your spouse happy? Are they always happy with you? Pretty frustrating. In the Western countries, due to the dissatisfaction of family members, there is actually no family life. So Marge was talking about this yesterday, right? How they all live in the same house, but they all have their different lives. You see this, the woman has her career, the husband has her career, and the kids have their sporting events, and everybody's just checking in to get something to eat, right? And now they each even have a television in their own room. They don't even have to sit together and watch the television. There are many cases of divorce, and out of dissatisfaction, the children leave the protection of the parents. So husband-wife divorce, and children also leave. Especially in this age of Kali, family life is being reduced. Everyone is becoming self-centered because that is the law of nature. Even if one has sufficient money to maintain a family, the situation is that no one is happy in family life. So people think, you know, if I just had enough money, that would solve all of my problems. The promise is, that's not going to happen. Consequently, according, so what's the solution? All right, what's the problem? Is it a problem? Anybody have some doubt that it's a problem? Would everybody like to be happy? Would we like to be happy? Anybody doesn't want to be happy? Sometimes people, the solution, they just say, well, you just don't try to be happy. I think there's a conversation, I think in November-December back to God, Prabhupada speaking with this one pseudo-priest who's saying, you know, just accept that we're suffering. Prabhupada says, this is nonsense. We're not supposed to accept that we're suffering. Why should you just,
all right, I guess we just have to suffer.
So what's the solution? Okay, are you ready for the solution? It's going to be one of those kind of solutions. One should voluntarily retire from family life at the age of 50 and go to Vrindavana or a forest. This is recommended by Srila Prahlada Maharaj from Bhagavatam 7.5.5. That's Sadhu Manye, Suravarya Deinam Sada, Sadhu Vigna Diyam Sadhgrat. Hidvatva Patam Grihaman Dekupam Vanam Gato Yad Dhani Mashirita Vanam Gato. Go to a forest. Then Prabhupada says a really funny thing. He says there is no benefit in transferring from one forest to another. What do you think he means there?
Change spouses.
Change spouses. Okay, so we know some people who've tried that. I know some people who've tried that like 3 and 4 times. Okay? Well, this person didn't work out. Let me try another one. Let me try another one. Let me try living together without being married. That's become very popular in Eastern Europe and Islam. What else could Prabhupada mean here? There's no benefit in transferring from one forest to another. Yeah. Because sometimes bad family life is also compared to a forest, right? Where the wife is like a tiger and the children are like jackals. They never say what the husband is like. Just the Lord Kapila did, that's what I'm saying. So bad family life can be like a forest, and Prabhupada says there's no benefit in going from a bad forest of family life to a forest. So why is Prahlada Maharaj saying Vanam Gato is the solution? One must go to the Vrindavana forest and take shelter of that forest. That will make one happy. Here's the solution. The International Society for Krishna Consciousness is therefore constructing a Krishna Balaram temple to invite its members as well as outsiders to come and live peacefully in a spiritual atmosphere. Okay, ready? Let's go. Let's all go to Krishna Balaram temple in Mundar. No, that was Prabhupada saying. That will help one become elevated to the transcendental world and return home back to Godhead. Another sentence in this verse is very significant. Kotumbika pruditi vayinjanahaya, which means what? Yeah, that when one is in family life, one becomes angry at jana. Jana literally means people, at one's family members. When one's mind is disturbed in so many ways, he satisfies himself by becoming angry with his poor wife and children. The wife and children are naturally dependent on the father, but the father, being unable to maintain the family properly, becomes mentally distressed and therefore chastises the family members unnecessarily. So already the family is suffering because a man can't earn enough money, and then to compound the matter, then he yells at them. Or worse. As stated in Srimad Bhagavatam 12.12.9, it's actually, I think, 12.12.8. Achina dara dravina yasyanti giri kanayam. Being disgusted with family life, one separates from the family by divorce or some other means. If one has to, so this is even more, so he becomes unhappy with his family, or he... she leaves. So either yells at them or leaves. If one has to separate, why not separate willingly? Now this is very, very instructive. Systematic separation is better than forced separation. Forced separation cannot make anyone happy. So in other words, divorce cannot make anyone happy. But by mutual consent or by the Vedic arrangement, one must separate from his family members at a certain age and fully depend on Krishna. This makes one's life successful. So Prabhupada's distinguishing the separation of vanaprastha from the separation of divorce. Chalan kvachit kantaka sarakaranamir nagar vurkshur vimana ivaste pade pade yantara vahinarvita kutumbika kundati vajanaya. Sometimes a merchant in the forest wants to climb the hills and mountains, but due to insufficient footwear, his feet are pricked by stones and thorns on the mountain. Being pricked by them, he becomes very aggrieved. Sometimes a person who is very attached to his family becomes overwhelmed with hunger. And due to his miserable condition, he becomes furious with his family members. So here's a nice description of the nature of the material world. We're working very, very hard, right? When we were in school, sometimes we worked really hard, didn't we? Really studied for an exam, we were up cramming all night, we worked so hard to try to get a good grade on the exam, we worked really hard to be good in sports and get our varsity letter we could wear on our sweater. Do they do that here? Do you get letters wearing on your sweater, people in sports? No? They do that in America. You do that? You know, one may work really, really hard to be a success and become famous, or one may work really, really hard to try to attract a member of the opposite sex, one may work really, really hard to earn the money to buy a house. Maharaj was talking yesterday, $600,000 to buy a house. Oh my God. And what to speak of working hard to make the payments, right? Working hard to take care of the car and to get all the money to buy all the gadgetry and to put your kids through the same thing and so forth and so on. You know, and all the ambitions that we have in this world, and how hard, some of them obviously come easily, but some of them we have to work so, so, so hard to accomplish something. You know? And in the process, we may feel very internally aggrieved. And then what do we do? What does the conditioned soul generally do when we're suffering in this world? What's our reaction to our suffering? Two things that I mentioned. We get very frustrated. And what do we do, usually? There's two things.
Make shelter of some form of intoxication or something.
Yeah, that certainly that happens. That isn't specifically mentioned here. But yeah, we take shelter of some. We try to just numb the fact that we're suffering with chemicals, or today there's electronic intoxication. You don't even have to take chemicals, you just sit in front of your TV or your computer game and you get intoxicated. new method of intoxication. And what does it say here? Also, one is feeling this frustration. What do we do?
We lash out
at others. Hiranyakashipu is described like this. Hiranyakashipu is a good example. He worked really, really hard. Did he work really, really hard? 125 years by the demigods. And each demigod day is one whole of our years. So it was a long time. He was doing all these austerities. And then he got what he wanted and he'd think he'd be happy. But there were two symptoms he was unhappy. One was he was always intoxicated, it says. And the other was he was always yelling at the demigods for no reason. They were all his servants, but he was always yelling at them. You ever have any authority like that? You ever had any kind of boss or authority like that who was always yelling at everybody? Have you ever done that? You think, have I ever done that? Have I ever just been frustrated or sick or hungry or tired? And what do? I yell at my family members? Or I yell at the other devotees that I'm working with? You don't have to raise your hand. And we take out our frustration on the people around us. We blame them. We blame them. I was thinking about it in this world. Different people are perceived as our gatekeepers for our sense gratification. Like the wife and the children, if they want anything, they have to ask permission from the father. Can I go here? Can I buy this? You know, I want a new house. I want a new fire truck, whatever it may be. They have to ask permission, and then if the husband or father says no, what do? Often they get angry at that authority, right? If the man is working, can get what he wants, he gets angry at the boss. In ISKCON, we get angry at our temple presidents, at our GBC, at our gurus. It's very common, isn't it? Isn't it? Right? That we see them as the gatekeepers for our sense gratification. Of course, we redefine sense gratification. We define sense gratification as going to Vrindavan on pilgrimage or something like that, being able to do the service that we want. I want to do this service, and my authority won't let me. I just got a call from a devotee the other day like that. I wanted to go to the class of this one devotee. Their classes always inspire me. And my tel president wouldn't let me. They made me stay back and do service. I hate him. How am I going to make any advancement if I'm not allowed to go? I said, so what did you do? I went anyway. And what happened? I was miserable the whole time and I got nothing out of the class. Huh. So, you know, we blame the other people in our environment. It's their fault. Now, if my wife would just cook the way I like, then I'd be happy. If my husband would let me go on pilgrimage, then I'd be happy. If my children would just do what I tell them, then I'd be happy. If my parents would let me get a new water gun, then I'd be happy. If my temple authorities would let me go to India, then I'd be happy. I know a devotee who's been angry at her guru for 10 years because he told her to do some service in Mayapur where she got sick. If my guru would just let me do what I want, then I would be. And Krishna says, what do the demons do? They're thinking, I've killed so many enemies. Right? I've killed my enemies and I'm enjoying and I'll kill the rest of my enemies. So we also think like that. As soon as the people around us are facilitating our sense gratification, then we love them very much. And as soon as they appear to be blocks to our sense gratification, then we hate them. People even kill their husbands, wives, children. So we see that the other people in our life as the cause of our suffering. And we get angry at them. Why are we angry with them? What are we trying to accomplish by our anger? We're trying to get what we want. We're thinking, if I get angry at them, then they'll give me what I want, and then I'll be happy. Right? I'm trying to manipulate them. And if that doesn't work, or maybe we may do it in subtle ways, women sometimes especially do it in more subtle ways than getting angry. Oh, would you please let me go? And if that doesn't work, then what do we do? What does Brahma say? Then the next step is we leave. All right, I'm fed up with you. I'm fed up with this job, I'm fed up with this temple, I'm fed up with this husband, with this wife, with the parents, with this, I'm going. And in Krishna consciousness, we may think that that's a symptom of our great renunciation. I am renouncing this family life because it was so much trouble. Right? But what does Krishna say? That renunciation is? More passion. More passion. And he says if that renunciation doesn't give you any fruits of renunciation, which is why Prabhupada's saying here that that kind of separation doesn't bring you any happiness. That kind of separation and of disgust. Because it's all due to illusion. Getting angry at the person, trying to manipulate the persons, or leaving the persons, what is that all based on? The concept that what? I'm the enjoyer. Everybody's supposed to facilitate my enjoyment. I'm the center of the Rasa. I'm supposed to be coronated the king of Vrindavan. It's just this morning hearing Shiva Ramaswamy reading about Coward Lewis coronating Krishna as the king of Vrindavan. And also we're thinking that these people are the reason I'm not enjoying. The situation is the reason I'm not enjoying. It's their fault. If everybody else would just do what I say, if I could just be the controller and manipulate everybody like a puppet, and get, you know, if I could be God, what a nasty God we want to be, huh? Krishna's not like that. Ankara vimudatman parthahamitamanita. I am the doer. And if I could just get everybody to do things the way that I wanted, Krishna's not like that. He gives us free will. He's not into slaves. Then I would be happy. So we're thinking the other person is the source of my happiness and distress, and the reason that I'm suffering, the reason I'm being pricked by these stones and these thorns, and the reason I'm hungry is that just other people aren't cooperating with me. And of course we frame it in ways that, well, they should do this. My wife should do this. It's her duty. My child should do this. My husband should do this. My guru should do this. Therefore, I have a right to be angry. We very rarely go deep and say, wait a minute, why am I really angry and frustrated? What's the real cause of our suffering with these thorns and hunger and all this stuff? What's actually the cause? What's actually the source? What's the cause? What's the real problem? I'm asking. Don't ask teachers to. Identification with the body sounds like a big one. Because all these thorns and pebbles and hunger isn't happening to me at all. It's happening to the body. Why am I identifying with the body? Why am I doing that? It's really a nasty thing, you know? A little later in the fifth canto, we'll read about the hells, and there's one hell where you get to swim in this ocean of hair, river of hair and blood and skin, and you go, and then you think, I'm already doing that every day. You know, if you took all the parts of the body and made a pile of it, okay, jump in and animate it. I don't think so, but that's what we're doing. And then we look in the mirror and go, it's getting harder and harder for me to do that. Why do we identify with the body? Why are we doing that? To try to enjoy separately from Krishna. Now, what we want on a very basic level is not wrong. We want to be happy. Is it wrong we want to be happy? Is that wrong? No, none of my views suck. We're happy by nature. It's not wrong. We want life and energy, vitality, youthfulness. You don't want death and invalidity. Is that wrong? Ajodhacha shasvata yam karno nahanite yamanayashuri. Is it wrong to want life and happiness? Is that wrong? We want knowledge. Is that wrong? We want loving, respectful relationships and community. Is that wrong thing to want? Don't we have that in the spiritual world? Those are all valid things to want. We're just trying to get them in an awfully odd way. You know, I'm trying to fulfill my desires by manipulating a computer game instead of actually going and being with my family. And my family's having dinner in the other room, and I'm starving, trying to, you know, conquer some monster on a computer game. You know, there's Krishna, he's dancing, swinging, singing, he's running, right? He's doing all these wonderful things, and he's right there. And instead of joining his pastimes, and that way trying to get my happiness and my life and my knowledge and my community and my respect and my understanding and all the things that I want, I'm trying to get them here in this body. Why? Just because I don't want Krishna to be the center. That's the problem. The problem isn't you and you and you and you and you and him and her and them. And the problem's me. That's the problem. And how do we know that's the problem? Because if I start getting my desires for happiness and life and all fulfilled inside in Krishna, then it doesn't matter what happens in the world anymore. Just like, let's say I just ate, okay? Let's say you're at your house and you just ate a really nice meal, right? You got that, just ate this really nice meal, beloved, and the samosas and pizza and ice cream and all this stuff. And then you come to the temple and they say, sorry, prasadam's all gone. Do you care? Does it matter? Would you get angry? But suppose you were really hungry. You were traveling, and it was Ekadasi, and because you were traveling here, you had three Ekadasis in a row. I had that when I traveled here. I was trying to decide, when do I break Ekadasi and then follow it again? You know, you've been fasting for 3 days, just reading how Lord Nityananda and Lord Chaitanya, after Chaitanya Mahaprabhu took sannyas, they're traveling in the Radha Desh, and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in ecstasy doesn't eat. Actually, great devotees don't fast, they just forget to eat. And they come to Advaitacharya's house by Lord Nityananda's tricks, and Advaitacharya's bringing them this huge amount of prasadam. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says, you know, I'm a sannyasi, I'm not supposed to eat this stuff, it's too much. And Lord Nityananda says, I've been fasting for 3 days, this isn't any food. He says, you still want me to fast? Not even a morsel. Right? So you're fasting for 3 days, and you come to the temple, and there's no prasadam. One time when I did a nirjala and a kadasi, I saved some prasadam from the noon offering. To break my fast, I put a cyanide wormulas, hands off, and put it in the refrigerator. I was in the ashram, so I had to just go in the gym refrigerator. Guess what happened to break fast? My plate wasn't gone. Someone had come back from a preaching program in the middle of the night and seen it, and they thought, well, she hasn't eaten it by now. I guess she doesn't want it. I was not very happy. So when we're hungry and there's no prasadam, we're unhappy. But when we're full and there's no prasadam, it doesn't matter. If I'm satisfied through my relationship with Krishna, then it doesn't matter whether or not everyone else fulfills all of my desires, because my desires are already fulfilled. I don't need you and you and you and you and you and you in this circumstance to make me happy, because I'm already happy. Whether you let me go to the program or not, whether you cook nicely for me, whether you let me go to India or not, whether it got really hard to climb the mountain or not, it doesn't matter, because I'm already satisfied from within. So that is the point of going to the forest here. Prabhupada would say, the point of going to the forest to solve your problems doesn't mean that you just, you know, go camp out in the woods over there and hope that there's an avocado tree. That's not what it means. It means you take shelter of Govinda. You enter into Vrindavan. Now, it seems to be the Prabhupada saying, literally, you go to the Krishna Balaram temple in the geographical place known as Vrindavan in India, and that's true, but you can go to Vrindavan on the plane and the train and the taxi and still not be there. Several years ago, when I was there, I was picking up a CD from my husband from somebody who I shall remain unnamed. And to get this CD, I had to go into their room, which was, it looked like they never allowed any sunlight in. It was all dark curtains, and the place smelled like mold. It was really awful. And the devotee there, one of my very old members, said, "What's going on here in Vrindavan? Nobody's happy here anymore. Where's the bliss? Everyone used to always say it's so blissful." I said, "Prabhu, I've been here for a couple weeks, and everybody I've been with has been saying how blissful it was." So you can go to Vrindavan and not be in Vrindavan. As Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati said, you can be a Radhakund, but if you're in the wrong mentality, you're in Narakakund, you're in hell, you're not in it. When Prabhupada was asked, "Are you more Krishna conscious if you live in the temple?" In the early days of ISKCON, we measured Kanista, Majjhima, and Uttama by geography. If your body slept in the ashram, you were more Krishna conscious, and if your body slept in the flat across the street, you were less Krishna conscious. I'm serious. Anyway, so they asked Prabhupada, you know, is it better to live in the temple? He said, "That depends if your mind is on another subject matter." So if you go to Vrindavan and all you're thinking about is, you know, this GBC, this top resident, this person, then you're not in Vrindavan. And if you're here in Auckland and you're saying, "Here's Radhagiri Party," well, wherever there's Radhagiri Party, there must be Govardhan. Why, there it is. And well, if there's Govardhan, there must be Radhakund. If there's Radhakund, then there must be all of the residents of Vrindavan, and there must be Vamsivad. Just like you have a great fortune on Janmashtami to be at New Vrajdham, where Srila Ram Maharaj was taking us around New Vrajdham. Here's the Jamuna, and here's Mathura, and here's where Krishna met Kuja, and here's where this pastime is. And at first my mind's going, "Angry, where is he hungry?" And after a while I forgot I was hungry. So going to Vrindavan means that we take our consciousness to Vrindavan. Going to Vrindavan externally is not possible, undoubtedly. That we join Govinda, and that we go to the forest of Vrindavan, then we can be happy. And then we're not really living in the world at all. You know, one may be in Auckland, and one may be in Brisbane, and one may be wherever, Dubai. No, it's not. One's in Vrindavan. Because it's wherever Krishna is there, there's in Vrindavan. From a practical point of view, externally, Prabhupada's also talking more about going to Vrindavan. And it's interesting that he says, you know, if you're going to separate from family anyway, why not do it in a way that will be spiritually beneficial? So this is interesting because there is a tendency for people to want to separate, especially when they get older and the children have grown up. That's a very strong tendency. And what's happening now in the West is people, they get married again when they're 40 and 50. That's becoming very common. It's very common in the outside world, and it's unfortunately becoming very common in our international society for Krishna consciousness. You know, "I'm thinking of getting married," or "How old are you?" 58. But this tendency to say, "Okay, you know, I really don't want to have family life anymore." Once one hits middle age, they call it the midlife crisis, right? One hits middle age and children have grown up. That's actually a very natural tendency. So Prabhupada's saying, why not work with that tendency? Why do a separation in a way that's not going to help you in your renunciation, that's not going to help you become happy? You know, through divorce, everyone suffers in divorce. Any of you have had any experience with anybody, you know, any friend you know, or any family member you know that gets divorced, you see it's just so much suffering. You know, the children suffer, the parents suffer. It's certainly not an impetus for spiritual happiness. I'm sorry if I'm offending anybody by saying this. So please don't be offended. So obviously there are some reasons why one might want a divorce. I mean, if somebody's molesting the kids, and the only way you get legal protection is to divorce. It's not that there's never any reason to divorce. But unless it absolutely has to be there, generally speaking, that's not the solution. But the tendency toward renunciation should be done in a proper way. It probably says by mutual consent or by Vedic arrangement. So, of course, one can do vanaprastha in several ways. There are many vanaprasthas where husband and wife stay together, but they separate from the desire to enjoy family life. They separate from the desire to be the controller. And you know, you can do that even when you're 20. You can separate yourself from thinking, I'm the controller, I'm the enjoyer, and everyone else is supposed to be serving me and giving me happiness, and if they don't, I have the right to get angry. can also literally separate from one's family members in a proper way. That's also bona fide. And that, if done in the proper way, then it's very enlivening for one's spiritual life. So these, all of these, we don't deny any of these natural tendencies, but we say do them in a way that will help advance your Krishna consciousness. So next time we are feeling upset with the other people around us, which I know only happens to me, but just in case it happens to anybody here, and I know it happens very rarely, but in case it happens to any of you within the next week, let's say, that you have a tendency to get angry with somebody who's actually near and dear to you or someone who's in close association with you, maybe we can remember this and say, why am I really angry? Why am I really angry? Maybe the reason I'm really angry is that I'm trying to satisfy my natural spiritual desires in a material way. Maybe it's this person isn't the problem at all. Maybe the problem is me. Could I find a way of going to Vrindavan? Could I go to Vrindavan? Could I go be with Govinda? Right? One must go to the Vrindavan forest and take shelter of Govinda. Can I do that? Am I willing to do that? Am I willing to try to satisfy everything with Krishna, by serving Krishna? And am I willing to be so happy and fulfilled internally that I can be satisfied with anything in the world? And try it. You can just try it as an experiment. If it doesn't work, you can always go back to being angry and frustrated. That's no problem. And you can give it a try and see if it works. And if it works, you might find that it's far superior to the frustration and the bereavement and the anxiety that most people feel in the world. So thank you very much. If there's any questions, comments, corrections, additions, subtractions, chastisements.
You were implying instead of blaming everyone else and trying to think of all these bad things that are happening, that it's really myself, it's my karma.
I didn't use the word karma.
No, but sort of implied.
Well, karma is the specific way on the gross platform that our misdirected way of trying to be happy, etc., plays out.
But it must be our karma, right?
Or it could be Krishna dealing with us. It's something like, you know, if I want money, I could earn money honestly, or I could earn money by stealing. So if I earn money by stealing, one result of that is I might be arrested and put in jail. But the problem isn't exactly that I got arrested and put in jail. And the problem isn't even exactly that I stole. The problem was that I was using the wrong way of trying to meet a natural need. If I want money because I want food and shelter, there's nothing wrong with that. So my karma is the result of my misapplying a natural inclination of the soul. I'm misdirecting it. Like Prabhupada says, lust is just misdirection of love. When I take my natural love and service attitude towards Krishna and I misdirect it, I put it in the wrong place, the result of that is karma. The behaviors that I do, I karma little means action. I mean, even transcendental things, dhamma karma to me divya, and Krishna says his karma is divya. But we often use the word karma to mean materialistic, self-centered activities. So my behaviors that manifest from my misdirected ways of wanting to be happy and living and community and respect and all these things that I have as a soul, those behaviors, because they're misdirected, they give me reactions. Another simple example, what Prabhupada told my father. He says, if you put food in the stomach, you'll get good eyesight, and if you put it in your eyes, you'll become blind. I always get this mental picture of somebody sticking carrots in their eyes. You're misdirecting it. You're aiming wrong. You get the wrong hole. The carrot's fine. There's nothing wrong with the carrot. And there's nothing wrong with wanting to get the carrot in your body. But you've got to put it in the mouth, not in the eye. So when you put it in the eye, you suffer. So that's karma. Karma means I'm putting it in the eye instead of the mouth, and then I suffer. And then I get mad at the carrot. Stupid carrot. Just move it a few inches. So that's what our karma is. Our karma is kind of like an indication that we got the wrong entranceway. It's saying, how? How are you? Move a few inches. That's basically what karma is. It's saying, no, that's not the way things work. Does that make sense?
Blaming others and seeing faults in others, and that kind of I'm asking around discrimination and how you can just have discriminatory. If you see someone doing something and you become angry, then it may be justified in some cases. So how can you know?
So we have good justifications for not being happy, and I'm miserable for a good reason.
Arjuna, when he was angry in battle.
Oh, now that's different.
So there are circumstances where anger, or maybe not anger, anger is an extreme emotion, firing or spectrum.
Oh, anger, well, you're talking about anger, so let's do anger, right? Trividam narakashya jam jwalunava, jwaram nasana madmana, kama protasatala vas, trasma etam, fayam trajet. So anger is normally a gate to hell. But you can be angry for Krishna. Sometimes even great devotees are angry at Krishna. Right? When Balaram comes to visit Vrindavan, the gopis are saying, we don't want to talk about that Krishna anymore. He's happy without us. But then anger is ecstatic. You've got Krishna with you on the chariot and you're out killing the demons with Krishna. That's fun. Satyananda Mar said that there's a scientific experiment where a person gets really angry and they breathe into a glass, and you take that condensation of their breath, you feed it to a guinea pig, and it kills them. I think it can kill like 10 guinea pigs or something. It's poison. So yeah, if you can have that kind of anger, the other kind of anger Arjuna's having, that's fine. But that you should feel ecstatic. You'll know that that's real spiritual anger if you feel ecstatic. If you feel poisoned, you're off. If your anger is making you feel poor, you know what I'm talking about. If you get angry and you feel this, your heart kind of tightens up, you want to justify it. You can do that if you want. I have a list of reasons to poison myself. Okay. All right. Okay, I'm hungry, and I come to the temple, and they didn't save any prasadam for me. So that's justified. They were supposed to save prasadam. I told them I was coming. I put my name on the plate, and they didn't. They should have. It was their responsibility. And they didn't. So that's justified. But why am I angry? Because I'm hungry. If I wasn't hungry, would I be angry? No. Where was the anger coming from? That they didn't save the prasadam, or that I'm hungry? Okay, now what about when it doesn't have anything to do with me personally? Right? You remember the story of Punjari Virginity? He was angry that the Pujari put unstarched garments on the Lord. You know that story? He came for Arjuna Shasti when he was supposed to put wool garments, and he sees the deities are wearing garments that haven't been washed. And he's thinking the starch is going to hurt the Lord. But there was some problem with his anger. What was the problem? He became what? What was the word used, you know? Hateful toward the Pujaris. Now, because he's a great devotee, this is Leela, but it's still there for our instruction. And so that night, Jagannath Balaram came to him in sleep and slapped him around, and he woke up with his cheeks all red and swollen, and he was so happy. Krishna chastised me. But it's difficult, you know, if you see something like that, to do that without being hateful of the pujara, without it coming from envy, without it coming from, oh, I know better. Everyone should listen to me. Why are they doing it this way? Why don't they do it the way I know? Here's the shastra verse. You know, what's the mood? It's all about mood. Krishna consciousness is really all about mood. It's all about bhava. It's all about love. So one has to examine one's mood. Mahatma Guru has a really nice blog about this, how he saw his Krishna consciousness go way down, and he realized he'd written this letter trying to correct something in ISKCON, but the motive was envy. So, just be careful. Just because there's a reason for being angry doesn't mean that that's really what we want to do. Is it a good reason? Could you find reasons to be happy and peaceful? But yeah, ecstatic anger. Yeah, that sounds like fun. To be there in the battle with Krishna when he's fighting with Jarasandha and there's this river of blood. That's good stuff. Someone's coming and saying, God has no form and no senses, and we just start a kirtan and interrupt them. Prabhupada would do things like that. That's fun. So, transcendental anger should be fun. If it's not fun, if it's not ecstatic, if it's not increasing your love for Krishna, if it's not intensifying your concentration on your japa, it probably is a transcendental anger. If it's poisoning you and you feel all constricted, you go to chant and all you're thinking about when you're chanting is, oh, those people in this man, it probably isn't transcendental. Is that okay?
That's great.
All
right. I had another question.
Yes,
you're saying about transferring our natural inclination towards Krishna to satisfy gratification. Sometimes you come across the idea that I need a little bit of sex gratification from the soul. You know, mm-hmm. just to kind of tide me over, it's like
that's
kind of
true.
Reading me off.
That's true. That's true. And there's two nice examples of that. But know what it is. Understand that, okay, you know, I'm in the recovery stage, and while I'm in the recovery stage and while I'm transferring my lust into love, you know, I need some blood drugs in the meantime, or my mind will go crazy. So, in 1976, in the New York temple, so we were in Prabhupada's darshan room, and Prabhupada had wanted just to meet with my family, but everybody heard Prabhupada was having a darshan, and like 50 people came into me, and after that Prabhupada said, thank you. So I was sitting, my oldest son was on my lap, he was about 1.5, and you could time him, 45 minutes he'd be quiet, and after that he'd start being restless. 45 minutes he'd sit quietly, then 15 minutes he could play with my keys, and after that for him. So it was past the time. We'd gone 45 minutes, we'd gone another 15 minutes, and now it was getting to be a problem. And they had a plate of lugloos to give to the guests, so I started feeding him lugloos. And one of the devotees got to me and said, if you keep feeding him lugloos, he'll become a householder. It was a strange just like that. So, you know, for those of you who are parents, the way it really goes on. The way that you don't train your children to behave by giving them sweets whenever they're bad. Is that a very good parenting method? Are you going to suggest that kind of
reinforcement?
Reinforcement. So whenever the children are bad in the school now, you just keep putting sugar in their mouth. Shh, shh, here, take this. Shh. So that's not a very good child training method. In fact, if you train your children like that, they'll probably turn out really bad. But temporarily, to get the kid to be quiet, you may give them a sweet. So we don't train our mind by giving it sense gratification. It's not going to solve our problem. But sometimes temporarily, to keep the mind quiet, we say, okay, here, have this. Have your own bank account. Have your own house. You can say, this is my house. This is my wife. This is my kid. This is Okay, now you've got these things, now be quiet and let me chant. No, that's the... another example that I find very helpful is if you break your arm, let's say, and you go to the... What do they do if you have a broken arm? They put a plaster on it. Now, when you first break your arm, they may also give you some medicine. What kind of medicine will they probably give you? Painkillers. Why? Are the painkillers going to cure your arm? In fact, if you took painkillers without the plaster, what would happen? It would get much worse because you wouldn't know it was injured and you'd re-injure it. But they've done experiments that show that people who get painkillers when the pain is very acute heal faster. And the reason is, when you're in pain, your body naturally tenses against the pain. And it affects all the muscles. It doesn't allow your body to heal. So in the very acute stages, they give you painkillers. Now, the painkillers do not solve the problem. In fact, by themselves, they make the problem worse. And you only want to do that in the acute stage. You don't want to be giving painkillers forever. But painkillers initially are actually part of the healing process. Therefore, most people are recommended to go through the Grihastha Ashram. The Grihastha Ashram is a painkiller while you have on a cast of hearing and chanting. I'm really very serious. And it's for most of us, without that, actually the process takes much longer and is much more difficult. And it's not only the Grihastha Ashram, but giving some facility to anybody. I mean, having, like Prabhupada saying, we have this Krishna Balaram temple, people can live comfortably. Giving the devotees nice prasadam, giving people a room where they have, a decent bathroom, and all of it's like that. It's just to keep the mind peaceful. So that otherwise the mind is going, I can't do this. I can't speak to Krishna. So but please see it for what it is. That's what it is. It's like just something to make the mind, okay. Just, you've got this. You've got you. Now get to work on the real solution. But in and of itself, it's not the real solution. And if you depend on it, then you're in trouble. Is that all right? Yes, ma'am. That's hard, isn't it? Even Krishna doesn't like that. When Lord Varaha is being chased by Hiranyaksha, and he's taking care of his wife, the earth, so he's not immediately going to attend to this demon. He's carrying her up through the water, and he's placing her in the water and imbuing her with his ability to float. And while he's doing that, Hiranyaksha is insulting him. And he's very angry with him. It said the Lord was pained by the abusive words of the demon, but he bore the pain as he was placing the earth on the water. Prabhupada says there the Lord has feelings. At the end of the story of Jed Bharat, you read how when Jed Bharat was insulted by Maharaja Rudana, who was saying, what are you, old, skinny? What's wrong with you? Can't carry a pound for him? And Prabhupada says that Jed Bharat felt pained. So he felt some pain within his mind that he was being insulted like that, but he tolerated it. So the first thing is that I'm a living being. I'm part of Krishna. I have feelings. And if somebody's insulting me or angry with me, naturally there's going to be some distress. I'm not a stone. I don't want to become a stone. But then why is the person angry? Well, the same reason that I get angry. You have some compassion. This is a living entity who's misdirecting their desire for happiness and love and relationship and life. And just like when I do that, I get angry at people. When they do that, they get angry at people. And try to, at least internally, sometimes you can't do it externally, try to connect with them as a living entity. What is it they really want? Maybe they really want just respect and understanding and compassion. Do you think in the spiritual world there's respect and understanding and compassion between the residents? Of course. That's our natural state. If they want that, that's not bad. If they think they're going to get that from me, like I'm Krishna, then that's a problem. But everyone's anger with me is due to, again, it's due to some urge of the soul that's just misdirected. It's still hard. I just recently had somebody write an email to me. I don't even know this person. And they went through a list of all of my real and imagined faults and told me how everybody in this kind of hates me. Seriously, that's what they said. It was really painful. They said, when anyone hears you're kind of a temple, they all cringe. It was awful. It's like the worst blow, you know, behind your back. Like when I was just talking about the crickets, you know, you can't see them, but they're... And you know there's somebody behind your back. And when it comes out, do you know the people behind your back are saying that they hate you? And when I read this, I'm like, oh, God. I thought, okay, what does this devotee want? This devotee probably wants for ISKCON to be a nice, happy place where everybody gets along. And they think that I'm interfering with that. But that's their desire. Their desire is for a happy community. That's not wrong. And then the other way you can think is, okay, I talked about this before. Am I doing this to somebody? I get back what I give out. Do I ever get unnecessarily angry with somebody? Ever? So why should I be surprised that it's coming back at me? It's just a reflection of what I'm doing. Let me get my own house in order. And the devotee, I'll try to be forgiven. You say, Krishna, please forgive them. Please help. That's another class, another hour and a half class on how to deal with people who are angry with you. So maybe sometime I'll give my seminar on forgiveness. What is real forgiveness? How to develop that? Well, at the very least, you can see this person is misdirecting their desire for whatever. Happiness, community, security. They're seeing me as the person who's going to give them these things, and they're frustrated because I'm not doing it. How sad. Is that all right? You should probably end now, or you'll all be angry with me because you're hungry and you have this intense hunger in your belly, and because I'm going to stop talking, you're probably going to get wish it's stopped. So thank you very much. Oh, Lord, I should have been.
Yeah.